You're listening to the San Joaquin Sound Podcast, a podcast about music in Bakersfield and the surrounding San Joaquin Valley. I'm your host, AJ Rodriguez. For this episode, I travel to the 415, a DIY music venue in Bakersfield, California, to interview the band Gold.
I'm Taylor Gold. I do vocals. I write a lot of the music.
Alex, I play guitar and auxiliary vocals, jumping around, you know, stuff a lot like that.
Noah, play drums.
I'm Nate. I play guitar.
I'm Bernard. I play bass.
So in the first episode of the podcast, we talked about the Munoz Gym. How many of you went to the Munoz Gym when you were younger?
I lived in the shack behind Munoz Gym the first 10 years of my life. So, yeah, I went there.
I started going to shows at Munoz in like late 2013. The first show I saw there was Capitalist Casualties.
Awesome.
And Slight Slappers from Japan. Going from like the Jerry's Pizza hardcore scene, just from going to like every show I was able to go to then eventually finding Munoz, I just got to see like the stark difference between like authentic punk, like played in a place that it should be playing in.
That's where me, Nate, and Noah all fucking met. So like, if you were at Munoz Gym and you're still around, you're a fucking lifer, and we know who you are. You're probably like, we're still locked in. Munoz Gym alumni is a real fucking thing.
Nice.
Yeah, I was really late to getting to experience Munoz Gym. I think it might have been like 2015. It was the last couple of shows. My first show was Taylor's first band with Iron Lung. I saw Give there. It was only like three or four shows, but going there was my first like small show experience. I'd never been to Jerry's or anything like that, and it was just a like rattling experience. It changed everything. Seeing like the energy in the room and like just hearing that kind of music is an experience that like will stay with me forever, and obviously it shaped my entire life. So I really value that. And obviously, like he said, we all kind of met there, or at least we were in that space, and that's why we know each other. So the three of us like are still here today, you know, doing the same thing.
What were some highlight shows at the Munoz Gym?
Obviously, biggest highlight is Infest.
Yeah.
Final show, grand finale. It was fucking crazy. It was dangerous. It was completely packed. Another one was Despise You, ACXDC. A lot of the Power Violence shows. I loved seeing Doses and Gas Rag and Stupid Life. Yeah, just tons and tons of great shows there.
I missed a lot of the like legendary Munoz Gym shows, including the last one, because I thought that I wouldn't be able to get in. So for me, the biggest one that sticks out is probably seeing Give. That
okay.
Band rocks, and that show was amazing. Kind of a smaller show, but that was a really cool way to see that band. So
never got to go to a show at the gym, unfortunately, but the first show I did go to was at Babylon in like 2015 or some shit. And then like the biggest show I think I saw there was Crudos and Gensu. I think was probably like the coolest one there.
Babylon was kind of the successor to the gym, and then it became the 415.
Yeah, big gap in between.
Big gap. But
technically, yes.
So it goes fucking Munoz Gym, fucking Babylon, Narducci's house show era. And then intertwined in the house show era, Jerry's Pizza never leaves. It just, like, depends what's happening at Jerry's at any given time. Me and Noah had a fucking stint at Jerry's at the same time that we were doing the house show era. So also when we're talking about Narducci's, like, Narducci's is when me and Noah really start, like, getting in that shit. So, like, that's when we're starting to take over the shows and, like, run that shit. So even if someone else booked it, like, if it was Ian or Ronald, they're, like, dipping out. They won't fucking come to shows anymore. So now it's either me or this motherfucker. At the same time, I think you started throwing... When did you throw Gulagoon in Casey's pad? When was Gulagoon at Casey's?
Gulagoon was at Hector's.
Was that Hector's? Which, so you what year was that, though? Yeah, so like around then, like big shit. Like, I don't know if you could hear him because he's on the mic right now, but like we're talking like fucking CU Space Cowboy in a fucking like 50 fucking person living room, you know?
Wow.
Crazy shit. So like when we say house show era, we were doing crazy fucking shit at people's
at
houses.
At random houses?
Because yeah, random fucking houses, because we didn't have a venue and we weren't in a place to like open something like 415. Yeah, houses of people in the scene. Shout out Noah, shout out 415. Favorite gym shows though. Sorry, I went on a rant. So my favorite gym shows, trash talk at the gym was like some of the craziest shit I've ever fucking seen. That shit is what destroyed the ring for good. There were so many fucking people in there. It was a free show, and it was one of the scariest things I've ever seen. Martin Crudo's band, Needles, at the gym, one of the best things I've seen. Like, in my entire fucking life, my whole face exploded. It was sick. Milk Music, both times, amazing. Ice Age, both times, amazing. Those were the hits for me. Those were the hits for me. Hey, Los Crudos awesome. And Babylon was the fucking best local show ever, though.
I have more to add because I'm remembering things. Trash Talk was fucking insane. Also, my favorite lineup of all time that I witnessed at Munoz Gym was Ceremony, Nothing, Dangers. Who else? We saw... On Parade. Greatest hardcore band from Bakersfield, On Parade. Also, another one that I'm remembering is Soul Search and Fury. Munoz is where I discovered Fury, which is the greatest hardcore band of all time.
Fury's first show was at the Munoz Gym.
What music has influenced how Gold sounds?
I'd say everybody in the band is highly influenced by Fury. I see a lot of head nods.
First real tattoo I ever got right when I turned 18 is a Fury tattoo.
So yeah, Fury is a very important band to us.
Nice.
For me, Ceremony is probably one of my favorite bands. Literally just because of, I mean, many reasons, but they're so versatile. They show that you don't have to stick to one sound. You can do whatever you want. I'm influenced by a lot of... by a lot of Power Violence, by a lot of like Crossed Out, Sex Prisoner, Coke Bust, shit like that. Just fast hardcore in general.
Okay, nice.
For me, I'd say that like obviously the Rival Mob, we've covered Rival Mob for way too long. That's a huge influence on the band. And then like personally, it's a lot of late 80s hardcore, a lot of Youth Crew stuff, a lot of like OG punk, you know, the big names. That's what really got me into stuff, and that's what really influences the way that I write. So,
also, unsung influence of Gold is Morrissey.
Is that true? Yeah. Fact check?
Yeah. Unfortunately, yeah. Yeah, Jack the Ripper next.
For Gold, I think I'm very much inspired by like DC hardcore at various stages in time. Ebullition Records. 90s California hardcore, fast hardcore, more hardcore punk. I do feel that that the distinction is good, hardcore punk, but you know, for me there really is no difference.
A lot of my lyrics are influenced by like a 90s Revolution Summer emo. I really like Moss Icon. I really like Rites of Spring, Indian Summer, that kind of shit. I imitate the vocal delivery a little bit. I like trying to put that shit over like straight up fast hardcore. Musically, like when I write on bass or guitar, I'm more influenced by Painkiller Records, Outbreak, but specifically the demo record. I like Outburst, Agnostic Front, Cro-Mags, that kind of shit. So like tough guy shit, for lack of a better term.
There's this band called Julia that I really, really like. They put out one record in 94. In my mind, like that's how I want my guitar to sound. It would be remiss of me to not mention like screamo, any sort of punk and hardcore that is accidentally artsy. Like I'm a big fan.
Okay, nice. What if we define kind of punk rock? Because not everyone who listens might not even know what it is, and maybe even hardcore.
I think punk is political protest music at its heart. I think hardcore is distilling that into something meaner and faster. So yeah. If it's fucking mean, fast, nasty, and loud, then it's punk rock, isn't it?
Yeah.
Definitely agree with that assessment. The distinction for like hardcore is either like really stark or very synonymous at times. So punk and hardcore are almost always said in the same phrase whenever I describe it. But
yeah.
There's also like quote unquote capital H, which is like the more like outwardly like tough guy stuff.
I see.
And then punk is just, yeah, I'm not going to get too deep, but you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Punk, hardcore, at the end of the day, it's all badass, especially if it's old school.
Yeah, old school punk is badass. That's it.
For me, like, one of the central things to punk is DIY. The fact that you're doing it yourself. And how do you use that in your own music and your shows?
I mean, you're fucking sitting in it. This room you're sitting in and everything that Noah and I have done our entire fucking lives, we've done ourselves. Ain't no one fucking hold our hand through a single step of this process. And if someone's holding your hand through any step of this process, you're not fucking punk. Do that shit yourself.
DIY in general, I feel, is like a very, like, crucial, but, like, I don't think as many people understand it, the like, cost of it. But, like, I think spaces like 415 can, it's an applied practice, for sure. Just, like, the study of rocking yourself.
Yeah.
Without, like, you know, support from a larger entity.
Makes sense.
Yeah. It's just really important because I feel like I hate seeing people saying that they can't do stuff. I'll see a comment on some video of some kid being like, I live in bumfuck Idaho and there's no scene here. But if you dig into it, surely you'll find something or find people to create what you want.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I think DIY is just like, it's about making a decision. A lot of people experience DIY, like they go to the DIY venue, they like the punk bands that like participate in DIY. Yeah. They don't understand what they're saying. Like, you need to participate in that, and that is the only way to keep shit alive. Like, to what Noah was saying is, like, anyone can see, like, oh, this is a cool DIY spot. I wish I could do that in my hometown. You can. That's the whole point. You have to do it. You just have to make the decision that you're going to make the leap and, like, be the change you want to see and have the show or start the band or make the record. Like, it can be a lot of work, but you have to be committed to doing the work if you want to see that in your hometown or in, you know, whatever.
Hell yeah.
There is, like, a degree of, like, novelty, I think, to like, people just experiencing this for the first time, where it's like, oh, I saw a band play in an unconventional low location. Like, this only exists out of, like, necessity. Like, when there's no other place to do it, you just have to do it yourself, as it were.
Yeah.
The only thing I have to add or to say to that part, I mean, is that this, a big part that people forget is the yourself in DIY, you know, it takes a lot of work on your part, individual part. So, like, sometimes you can't always be there or whatever, but, you know, if everyone does a little bit of work in your scene or whatever, could kind of help it all come together. So.
Yeah. What's it like being a band from Bakersfield currently?
Being a band from Bakersfield is better than it probably ever has been because there are shows to play and people are watching for the first time in a long time. People don't pay attention to what's happening here. You could be doing the fucking coolest shit in the world, and no one gives a fuck what's happening in Bakersfield, California. Because when you go to one of the major metropolitan centers of the state, like fucking the Bay or Los Angeles or San Diego, and people ask you where you're from, you say Bakersfield, they laugh in your fucking face, and they treat you like you're a fucking hillbilly. And we're abandoned by the fucking state government. So being a band from here reflects that. No one gives a fuck what you do. So if you don't give a fuck, and you don't give a fuck about what your peers are doing, and don't, like, put a shine on that, and don't care about yourself and others, no one is going to come do it for you. No one is coming to save you.
As well, I think, like, Bakersfield is an unsung cornerstone, well, often unsung cornerstone of, like, American, specifically California punk history. Like,
yeah.
You know, with, like, Munoz being what it is, this almost, like, omnipresent zeitgeist. It's like people hear Bakersfield and they might not know, but then they might hear Munoz and they're like, oh, I've seen like videos of a band playing there from 20 years ago. I really do think it's a fourth corner of like California punk. If LA and San Diego and San Francisco are like the three assumed places, Bakersfield is easily like just as important or maybe more, I'm willing to say.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I've seen in a description for your first record talking about how Bakersfield is kind of in an economic sacrifice zone
and how your music kind of deals with that a bit. Growing up here myself, I had a tendency to, when I was looking for music or art or movies, to look out of Bakersfield because I felt like, well, everything cool is from everywhere else. And I had to learn how much cool stuff is right here.
Yeah, and it's like, I think with like any scene, like, I think Bakersfield's point, and in turn, plenty of other scenes, like, cool stuff is happening, like, in plenty of, like, nowhere towns. Like,
yeah.
Economic sacrifice zones are also, like, great places where culture can, like, just happen in ways that it can't in, like, a major metropolitan city.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a big place. It almost has 500,000 people living here, and that's the same as Washington, D.C., and they had a massive punk scene that still is active and affected how punk sounds. So we can do that too.
Oh yeah.
Well, we're not the Bay and we're not LA. And I think a lot of us take a lot of pride in that statement, and we derive a lot of our identity from not being the like major metropolitan centers that people think of when you hear the name California. Cause when you say you're from California, people assume you're from fucking San Francisco, Los Angeles,
yeah,
or San Diego. And they never assume you're from one of the butt-fuck places in the Central Valley. But frankly, I'm quite proud to be from Bakersfield, and I don't want to be from the Bay or L.A.
Bakersfield is like this place that still maintains a degree of like integrity, I think. Like, you go anywhere, at least on the east side, and there's like drive-ins or just like places that seem to just like exist as they were still.
Yeah.
I like that that Bakersfield is what it is and nothing else, while still being like a part of California.
Yeah, I can see that. And Bakersfield's interesting because you could walk down different streets and you can like almost visit different decades in how the architecture looks and what businesses are there. If you walk in downtown, you're going to see a lot more older stuff. You got Old Town Kern. It just depends where you are. As it's built, it's been expanded little by little, layer by layer, like an onion.
Big time. Beautiful. Like an onion.
How did you get the name Gold?
It's short, sweet, and to the point. Gold is the highest quality precious metal, and I intend to be the highest quality hardcore punk band.
So let's talk about your first release, 14 Carats, a 6-track cassette that came out on Extinction Burst. What inspired the sound and the lyrical content of that record?
So 14 Carats is a political protest record at its heart. All throughout the year in which I wrote that record, you just watch all the worst shit that you could ever imagine happen just on your fucking phone constantly. So you watch fucking genocide just after genocide after fucking genocide. You watch your fucking people get put in fucking concentration camps. You watch this fucking country just unfurl at the fucking seams, and you watch everyone realize that, oh, maybe America is an empire, and maybe we're fucking collapsing. And that's what that record is about. It's about, oh, the fucking state of California has decided that me and my friends and my family aren't worth shit, that you can fucking sacrifice every single fucking person in the Kern River Delta for your fucking oil interests. That's what the record is about.
Yeah, to some extent or another, we're all pretty politically aware, and we share, you know, a lot of the same political and social values. And watching the world fall apart in real time for our entire adult lives, and honestly longer, but that's when you really start to notice. It's always been too much. There's always been shit to say, and Taylor's always been really good at saying those things. So as far as I was concerned, it's really about making sure there was the proper backdrop to support what we needed to get across.
One of the core themes of Gold really is just like the righteous anger and plight of those of us that live in places that are forgotten by the powers that are supposed to protect, serve, rule, however so. And yeah, just righteous anger and being scary during scary times.
Yeah. I've seen you perform live a lot, probably like 7 times maybe. And the song Plata o Plomo, a lot of times, Taylor, you have like an introduction to that song. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, this song's about how rich people are allowed to burn down California and ain't nobody give a fuck. Watch us burn down. Watch Los Angeles burn down. You notice where it burns down. It's always fucking poor areas. It's our lives that are fucking ruined because rich people will burn down every fucking thing that we have ever laid fucking claim to in order to further their own interests. For example, we produce this entire fucking country's food, but we're all fucking dying here because you are poisoning our ground with oil and mercury. Like, fracking has destroyed this entire fucking valley. We are sinking so many fucking feet by the year. So we are quite literally being sacrificed in order to feed rich people. Me and you. You too. Every fucking person sitting in this room. And why is that? Why are we less valuable than them? How do you determine how another human is worth more? Are we not all the fucking same?
Yeah.
When you watch your home just get disregarded your entire life and like you're treated like a second fiddle politically, even though you live in actually a very politically relevant place, considering how much oil and how much fucking food is all exported from here and how much culture is exported from here. And you just watch it all get erased and you watch you and your family and your friends just get fucking poisoned and get cancer and die. And that really is what is at stake for all of us. Like, we're all very unhealthy. We are actively fucking dying. And I want people to care. Because, like, when people care, then maybe it's not just me screaming into the fucking void about this and something can actually be done. If everyone in Bakersfield all decides that they care about this or all decide that they want to see the Kern River flow again, then maybe we can see the fucking Kern River flow again.
And you don't just sing about it, because I've noticed there's been multiple benefit concerts here. In fact, I just went to one a couple days ago where we collected tons of cans of food for people in need.
Doge recently just cut funding for this hospice home. So that's to feed the elderly people in there. We've done benefits for the UFW Legal Fund. We've done benefits for Gaza. We're anarchists. So, like, we put our money where our fucking mouth is.
I think that doing benefit shows is something that we all would like to do a lot more of. And I think that I am really proud of what we have done. But it's not us. It's the community. We've gotten a lot of good people here who've come out to support these events that we've thrown for these benefits. And I just hope that we keep seeing that, because it's really heartwarming to see Bakersfield come together in this way.
Yeah.
I didn't know that we had it in us. I always wanted to hope so, but these past few shows where we've you know, raised the money for the UFW and we've collected this food, it's really it's given me a lot of hope, and I hope that we can continue to do that and help the community.
One of my favorite things to say about the nature of, like, benefit shows is, like, this is punk after all. Like, we're all here for the same reason, if that is important to you. Like punk as a form of identity, like, I think you should be here and you should bring canned goods or should pay $5 to $10 to support people who have been wronged by the powers that be.
And for anyone out there listening, I mean, if you have a platform, use it. If you care, then fucking care, because, like, direct action and makes the world go around. No one is coming to save any of us.
Yeah, for that UFW show, I know I saw you donated $1,250, and when I was there, everyone was giving extra money to get in, more than the suggested donation, scraping a dollar here, a dollar there, because they cared about the issue. So I think that's really admirable that a lot of people do talk about, you know, things need to change, but the fact that you're all doing something about it means a lot more.
It's directly for our community. Like, Bakersfield is an undocumented place. We're all Mexican. If that's who you are and you are, like, sitting idly by, if you're a fucking Latino for Trump, I don't fuck with that shit. Like, if you're being silent right now, you would have been silent in the fucking 1930s, too. And remember that shit.
I think I really was not shocked, but I was, like, very very glad to see people showing up and donating money, but then not even to stay. Like, I got to go back to work. I'm on my break. Here's $20 for the donor fund. Like, multiple people did that. It's a lot bigger than music, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's community building and, like, community actualization and like, very real, tangible good happening.
So after 14 Carats, which dealt with all of these issues that we're talking about, then you had Eternity Lies, and it even released on a record, right? A full record with both releases on it.
Yeah, it's a EP comp, so you got the new single on that, and then there's also 14 Carats on the back. That's the last time 14 Carats will ever be pressed, so I think it's sold out. We might have like one or two more, so if you need that, you could check, but I think it's gone.
But you can still listen to it.
Oh,
don't worry.
Forever. And I'm making some CDs. I might make some tapes. But 24 Carats next.
Eternity Lies starts with just bass and drums on the track Do You Miss the Feeling. So I wanted to ask Bernard, how do you approach bass for that album?
So originally Alex wrote the riff and I was kind of figuring out how to play it still. And while I was doing that, I think Noah was just like banging on the toms. And then we at one point were like, it would sound really cool if we had like feedback. And just, you know, it would give it like some edge or like some angst to it. I don't know.
Nice.
And it, yeah. But Alex wrote the riff, so.
And some bassists I see, they're really like standing still type, just like chilling. You don't do that. You jump around. You're all over.
Something
you're,
like that.
And you're still playing.
No, I love. I love playing shows live because I feel like the music like takes over my body and I literally want to just go fucking crazy.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's the best way to explain it, I guess. I don't know. I jump around. I like to have fun.
You think Bernard chill as hell till you see that boy get on stage.
So, Noah, you engineered the records too.
Yeah.
What's your approach for drumming?
Just trying to play as tight as possible. I still got work to do, but I'm trying my best.
So you're just trying to lock in.
Yeah, I'm just trying to be locked in. I don't even really see myself as a drummer just because I've always seen myself as a guitarist first.
Oh, yeah?
I learned how to play drums just from playing Rock Band. The maps stuck with me. And I knew how to play
Damn.
Say It Ain't So by Weezer from memorizing the game.
I've never heard anyone say they learned from Rock Band, but I'm like, you can't learn from playing the guitar, but the drums, you can. You're playing
it's
the
tangible.
Beats.
You can,
like, you're,
yeah,
playing,
you're playing
it.
You're playing the songs.
Yeah. They even have the pedal, so you could learn the bass drum. I can see that.
I became a drummer out of necessity when I was in, like, 2015, 2016, I started a grindcore band just because I wanted to play grindcore so badly.
Is that
badly.
Sand Coffin?
This one is
Mind
Funeral.
Or
Mind
Funeral.
Funeral.
Yeah. Okay.
I didn't know anybody that could play grindcore drums, so I had to teach myself how to do that.
Oh, yeah. So, do you have any drumming influences in the way you drum for Gold?
It's really hard for me to even think about what my influences might be, like, in terms of just drummers, because, like, it just feels really natural to me, but I don't really think about it.
Yeah. As a side note, all of you play multiple instruments, right? Because you played bass for Sand Coffin, drums and vocals for Only One, and you said you play guitar. Alex, you drum for So Real, and you were guitar vocals for Mascot Year. Nate, you play bass for Only One. Bernard, did you ever play drums? Yeah, I thought
so. Give this man the mic.
God damn it. No, I'm just kidding.
Great Expectations. Whoa. Is that right?
Whoa. Yeah, that's true.
How do I know?
Why are you an Ardmore?
Yeah, how did you know about that? I played drums in Great Expectations. But I played guitar first. I learned how to play guitar when I was like 13 or something like that. But before that, I had learned piano at like a younger age.
Nice.
So I can play guitar, bass, piano. can't remember why. I think I just wanted to start learning drums. So me and two friends that I originally started a band with started jamming. And, yeah, we were called Great Expectations.
Nice.
And I don't know. I wasn't super great, but I did like playing drums.
He's lying. He's really good at drums, especially back then.
Nice. And Taylor, you play instruments. You play guitar. When you're writing some of these songs, you're playing it on guitar?
And bass, yeah.
Bass too, nice.
Yeah. I prefer bass these days. I play guitar first. I play drums too. So.
Nice.
Me and Noah we've been in a bunch of bands together where I was either on drums or bass or fucking vice versa. So.
Nice. Yeah, Gold is not your first project. All of you have been playing in bands for a long time right here.
Besides Miss Pigeon, we're old, dog. Hell yeah, we've been in bands. Antipsychotics, Mercy, Strategy, Dead Spirit, Barrett, Richie? Is that everything we've been in together? Yeah, and Bad Trip. Fuck, my bad. You're looking at Bad Trip, shit.
Let's talk about La Matadora. That song is a tribute, and it's a highlight of your live shows. It gets the crowd super amped. What's that song about?
That's a tribute for our friend. Rest in peace, Brianna. Forever means forever. We ain't never going to stop talking about it. She was murdered in the fucking street. We ain't never going to forget. As time passes and you see people start to forget and quit talking about her and quit saying her name. I mean, after it happens, everybody's screaming forever. When you watch people start to forget about her, that shit hurts. Cause like when me and Noah say forever, we mean fucking forever. And like, I'm going to scream that shit till the day I fucking die. And wherever the fuck we go, I'm carrying her fucking name and her fucking memory with us.
Yeah. Rest in peace, Brianna.
La Matadora is my favorite song that you've released. I really like how it changes throughout the song, and there's a big breakdown, and then it speeds up again and hits you like a truck. It is just a really good song. Alex, I noticed for some of the songs on the album that I like to say you're adding spices into the mix because you like add harmonics and like dissonance and feedback and stuff. I've noticed that at least playing live. What's your approach for that?
Exactly what you described, honestly. I think that's a good way of putting it. Like, I just want the music to sound interesting. And I think for my approach to, like, recording, like, I like for there to be really as little barrier between, like, the sound of someone or a band playing in a room, but in my case, a guitar player playing. I don't seek to do anything really that different when I'm on record. So, like, whatever is there live, like, I try to have it be there. The noisiness and the spice, so to speak, is really just like never stop being engaging.
Yeah. It adds a lot of texture to the song, and it really, really adds a lot.
I agree.
Nate, what influences do you have when you're playing guitar?
I feel like I've always been somewhat bad at distilling my influences. I'll like say I want to write a song like this, and then until recently that's not really what happens.
Yeah.
I guess my biggest influences would be Closet Case, which we've talked about.
Yeah, that's a mutual band that we both like.
That's the most influential band in my life. Just that 7-inch, I think, is one of the best records ever written. So everything I do is trying to reach those highs. I would say like Fury is a huge influence, but I don't write anything that sounds like that. I would love to. I try to. It just doesn't happen because however I distill that, it doesn't come out that way.
Yeah.
A lot like Gorilla Biscuits, Judge, those are really what I'm pulling from when I write for Gold.
Taylor, what's your songwriting process? How do you go about writing a song?
For lyrics, I write that shit without music most of the time first.
Before the music or after?
Typically before. Occasionally, whenever they bring songs, I'll write specifically to what they bring. But if it's something I write the lyrics first. I'm really inspired by like beat poetry and Bukowski. So I like Kerouac, Ginsberg, Burroughs, that kind of shit.
Nice.
And I try to emulate that in the writing style. I don't know how successful I am, but that's what I'm going for. Also, like that and Moss Icon. You want the fucking Taylor Gold songwriting fucking starter pack, you go read some fucking beat books and listen to the Moss Icon discography.
Let's talk a little bit about your live shows. You've performed at the 415 plenty of times. You're basically the house band. But you've been on tour this summer. all around. What's it like taking Bakersfield music on the road?
I feel a great sense of pride. I think, like, people's ears perk up, for better or worse, when they see Bakersfield on a flyer. I think it's good to challenge people's preconceptions of places, of which Bakersfield has no shortage of those.
It's one of my favorite things. It's literally the mission statement. I just want to go places and for people to know that we're from Bakersfield and that we're doing cool shit in Bakersfield.
Yeah, I'm incredibly proud to be from where I'm from, and I am incredibly stoked on the music that we make. So it's my favorite thing in the world to go out of town with this group of people and play music. Like, I want to be in a, if I could, I'd be in a different city every night playing music. Like, I just want gold to go everywhere. That's all I want.
Yeah.
So it feels really good when we get to do that.
I love saying that I'm from Bakersfield, and I want Bakersfield to be the spot that every band says that they want to play at least once, because, or like, if they want to play in Bakersfield, it's probably because they want to play here at 415. It's also nice to get to go on tour and take our names elsewhere, because it does take a toll, I guess, playing here all the time. But yeah, we're trying to get out of town more.
I think adding intrigue to Bakersfield and like being like, oh, I liked hearing that band, so, and then they might feel curious to go north of the grapevine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Often when they DM us to book them here, they'll be like, hey, but will Gold play? And let me tell you, that's the bane of my fucking existence, because Gold's played over 50 fucking shows in less than a year because people want to play with us here. But I'm incredibly fucking flattered, and I wouldn't change it for the world, and the answer is always yes. So if your band wants to fucking play here and you want us to play with you, yeah, I fucking guess.
Hell yeah. You know, I want to contrast that, because at the beginning we talked about a lot of negative things about Bakersfield that are happening, but all of you said you're proud to be from Bakersfield, to rep Bakersfield, and you're trying to make something awesome here to show how cool it is.
I mean, Bakersfield's always been kind of sick. Like, I think it's important to emphasize that it's a very difficult place to live in, and in particular, sure, it is a very difficult place to grow up. Because when you're a child here, frankly, you have access to a bunch of terrible things that can ruin your life in a fucking instance, but you really don't have access to a whole lot that's, like, beneficial or constructive or cathartic or even just safe. Like, kids here are very in danger. There isn't shit to do but drugs and crime. Like, that's what people do here. And giving them an alternative to that shit means more to me than you could ever fucking imagine. Because, like, we were lucky enough to have that. And we all didn't stay out of fucking trouble, but it didn't get nearly as bad as it could, because there were places we could go to be safe. There were places we could go to meet people like us. We didn't have to be fucking freaks. Sure, you're a freak every day of the fucking week, come, but when you go to the fucking gym, or when you go to Babylon, that's all your homies. Everybody's the fucking same. So, yeah, it's important to provide that. If you were lucky enough to have something like that, then you understand what it did for you, and you need to pay that shit forward.
Yeah, and that was something that was done at the gym before it was a music venue. A lot of boxers, you know, went there and had a place to go outside of the struggles that were around them.
Yeah, my grandpa provided a very good example for us. You have to be the change you want to see. Because we don't have fucking resources here. Our communities are poor. We don't have community centers where people can go be safe and fucking congregate and, like, build a community. But how you mentioned earlier when you asked us about the why we do the benefit shows, we want to build a community here. We want people to feel like they have a place here and with each other and in this fucking city. Because eventually, if we are all the change that we want to see in this fucking world, then actually Bakersfield is going to change. And we're trying to show these kids that they can do whatever the fuck they want. Oh, they look at you different because you're from Bakersfield? Fuck them. We do whatever we want.
Bakersfield has changed music history in a massive way at least two times. There's probably more with the Bakersfield sound, with country music. Everyone wanted country music to be really flashy at the time. And Buck Owens was like, no, let's strip it down to its roots. And it was a massive success and started a new genre. And Korn in 94, new metal, no one had ever heard anything like that. And the only place that could have invented that was right here.
Our Bandcamp is tagged under Bakersfield Sound as well.
Nice.
There's hardcore punk, Cro-Mags, Bakersfield sound. To add to the Munoz conversation, and in turn the punk and hardcore conversation, like, I think in particular punk and hardcore, like, has a very strong sense of, like, recontextualizing the violence that's inflicted on working class people just outside of spaces like this. And, you know, people can mosh, people can get violent in the ways that a lot off steam, so to speak, for better or worse. A lot of the kids and, you know, adults even that need it are able to express themselves in this sort of dance. It is a dance.
Yeah, I've seen it firsthand, just kids coming up to us and saying that their lives are fucked up, they go through fucked up shit, and coming here is just a release, and it's like the only place they feel like home, and just going to do this and let out their aggression helps them a lot and gets them out of trouble, and just, yeah, you know who you are.
And every fucking time I think about quitting, I think about those kids who tell us that we're helping them keep their fucking noses clean, and that's why we're still going.
So No Threat Bakersfield, that's all of you? Or that's a group?
No Threat is primarily Noah and myself, and it has been for a long time, but we are growing, and we are a conglomerate. We got a team now.
I saw a tape from 2014 that said No Threat 2014.
It's not a label anymore. Now we're a production company or conglomerate, whatever the fuck you'd like to call it.
So that's where the name comes from. But what does it mean? Does it have any relation to Minor Threat?
Yeah.
Are you even minorer than a threat?
That was the concept when I was a little kid, yeah. Nice. And that's when we came up with the name, so, yeah. Yeah, No Threat has meant me and Noah for a very long time now.
What are some of your favorite shows that you've thrown with No Threat?
So some of the recent ones that, like, really stick out. We just did Haywire. Haywire was a fucking...
I was there. It was wild.
That was a fucking blast. That's one of my favorite shows I've ever fucking thrown. Noah and I did Necron 9 recently. That was a goddamn blast. Noah did fucking Speed Plans Ultras, and that was, like, the Speed Plans Ultras God Gold. That was, like, the best fucking side-to-side lineup we've had in fucking years.
Yeah. Haywire definitely was a big favorite. It was just goated.
Yeah, I got a black eye at that show. It was good.
Yeah. The Speed Plans Ultra show is just, like, my favorite contemporary punk. One that I'm super excited for that hasn't happened yet is Weekend Nachos, because that's one of my favorite fucking bands of all time.
Nice.
A recent No Threat show that I really, really enjoyed being at and playing and just, like, being present for was CMOS and Spring Breeding. Like,
oh yeah,
two very cool sort of no wave, highly experimental bands, but I really just enjoyed the fact that they didn't use any of the shit provided by the venue. They played on the floor, brought all their own, like, speakers. Both bands in some way, shape, or form operated very, like, independently and very aware of what they wanted to convey. Very, very memorable show.
And very DIY, because I saw, I think it was CMOS, she had made her own synths out of tin cans, and they had buttons on them, like, that looked like arcade buttons. It was sick.
I love a crazy-ass drummer and a crazy vocal technique and, like, crazy noise boxes and synths.
Yeah.
It's all awesome.
It's a lot of the same, honestly. Like, Necron 9 is one of the best punk bands I've seen in a very long time. Speed Plans is one of the best punk bands maybe ever. I mean, it's just great. But if I want to add something, like, new to the mix, my favorite band I've ever seen in this space was definitely Tieni Paa from Finland. Like, I actually go back and listen to that shit all the time.
One of my favorite more recent shows was Big Ass Truck. It's not necessarily, like, a punk show, but...
And you're wearing their shirt from the show right now.
Yeah, I am wearing it. Uh-huh.
Have you heard Speed Plans? Speed Plans are the saviors of American punk.
Hey, real quick. Rest in peace, Briano. Rest in peace, Jordy Loke. Up in smoke. Fucking big XIX in this bitch. Por vida y después.
What are your plans for the future?
Trying to play a bunch of gigs. Trying to write an album. Trying to do the thing.
Nice.
Play, write, record, and then do it again.
Rock.
Yeah, what they said. We just got booked out of the country for the first time. I'm trying to go across the fucking country next year. I don't know. As far as we can fucking take it, we're going to take it. If you hear this shit and you want us to play your shithole, hit us up. I'll come play your shithole. Or on the other hand, if you want us to come play Paris, we'll come play Paris too. Fuck.
All right, so I like to end off every show by shouting out some current local artists. Now, what's interesting is you are current local artists, but what are some artists you think people should check out?
So from Bakersfield, you need to listen to Pump Fake, Prohibition. Listen to that new Sack Tap EP. Everybody go listen to Amputation and check out Glass Angels. Outside of Bakersfield, everyone needs to be listening to Axe Collector, Gun, and Pseudo Youth. Please check out About Face. And that's it from me, folk.
Yeah, Taylor named a lot of them. Start Today, The Difference. Human Resources is one of my favorite bands I've seen recently from San Diego. Same with Bayonet.
Lot in Life, Conspiracy, they played here recently. Those bands rock. Definitely worth checking out, 100%.
Hey, real shit, though. Shout out Start Today and The Difference.
Speed Plans.
Punk rock, skateboarding, hardcore, moshing.
One last thing I really need to know. Is old school punk badass?
Hell yeah!